Friends, there's a lot of things to say from many, many years ago, and I'll just go ahead and say this from the start. God gave us two eyes, two ears, and one mouth, so we can see and hear twice before we speak once. What my two eyes and my two ears have seen and heard before and after AA started, I will speak to you and tell you of some of the miracles that happened before and after AA. I would like to dedicate this meeting to Alex Marcona. Ed Mead down there, I'd like to mention something to him. Ed Mead, 38 years ago, he joined AA. He has been at Dr. Bob's house, and he talked to Dr. Bob's daughter and Dr. Bob's son when they was little boys and little girls. First, I would like to go ahead and tell you something, a message to and from Mrs. Lois Wilson of Bedford Hills, New York. It was down to see Lois Wilson on October the 2nd. When I got to Mrs. Wilson and her secretary from the New York Central Office, I said, on my two knees, I took Mrs. Wilson's hand and I kissed it. And I said, I bring you a message from 2,000 groups of AA from the state of Ohio. And they all wish you the best of health and good luck in a longer life than you have in 92 years. Mrs. Wilson asked me to go ahead and give the message to men and women of Ohio. She said, will you tell the men and women in AA in Ohio that I wish them all the best of luck and the good health and a longer life than her 92 years? And that she has turned over the foundation to the AAs forever. When the girls from Tallahassee University drove me to the Orlando airport, we was flying above the clouds all the way to St. Louis, Missouri. And as high as I was above the clouds, I was thinking of Alex Marcona. High up in heaven, under the care of God, when I landed at the St. Louis airport, I have seen. In the airport terminal, the spirit of St. Louis, the airplane in the picture of Lindbergh, the hero that flew across the ocean. Yes, friends, that reminded me when Lindbergh was looking for a sponsor to fly him in his airplane across the ocean, and they all said that he was too young and he would never make it. But the city of St. Louis, Missouri, sponsored Charles Lindbergh, and he made it. And they named it the Spirit of St. Louis, and that was the way with Alex Marcona. The way with Alex Marcona, Bill Wilson didn't want Alex Marcona to be sponsored in AA, because Bill Wilson thought that Alex Marcona was too young and didn't have enough experience. But Dr. Bob thought different. Dr. Bob sponsored Alex Marcona. And Alex Marcona is our hero, just like Charles Lindbergh is the hero that flew across the ocean. Hero, he also made it as number 87 in AA. There is a man that nobody wanted to sponsor. They thought he didn't have enough experience in AA. But he made it. He made it, just like Lindbergh. Flew across the ocean with the spirit of St. Louis. The dear ones will miss Alex, and we in AA will miss him. Charles Lindbergh's spirit of St. Louis will be seen by hundreds of thousands of heroes, and Alex Marcona will also be seen in my AA museum of how he has stopped taking the alcoholic spirits as number 87 in AA, and he made it in AA for 43 years. There's your example of AA. Friends, AA didn't start with the snap of the finger. It took many, many pieces. If you have a jigsaw puzzle on a table, it's scattered on that table. And you pick out piece by piece to put it together. But with AA, it was scattered through the cities, small towns, and other states. And those pieces had to be put together. And it didn't take a week or a year. It took many years to go ahead and do that. I wanted to go ahead and mention about the well-dressed man. You people here in Ravenna are wondering who the well-dressed man is. And when I tell you the story of the well-dressed man, I want you to listen and remember it for the rest of your life. Because I prayed to God for 54 years that I would be here in Ravenna to go ahead and tell you this story. Since 1929, I thought I would go ahead and tell it to the people of Ravenna. There was no AA then. But now, since there is an AA, God made it so that I would be able to tell the people of AA of the miracles that happened in Ravenna. 54 years ago, I will start out with my first drink that I had in 1912. Now remember, follow my story, step by step, destination by destination. And when you lay on your pillows at night, this year, next year, 10, 20 years from now, remember these words that I say here tonight. In 1912, my grandfather bought a Potbelly stove, and he wanted to celebrate it, so he gave me 5 cents to go to the saloon and get a 5 cent bucket of beer. And I remember him telling my grandmother to be sure to go ahead and wipe the inside of the bucket with lard so the lard will kill the foam, you get more beer for a nickel. I went to the saloon and got the pail of beer, and he filled 3 glasses, one for each of us, and that was the first drink I had in 1912. In them days, people raised large families, and there was either a christening or a birthday, and I'd always manage to get my share of the beer at a christening or a birthday. If there wasn't, the saloon keeper's son was a friend of mine. I'd go down with him to the basement of the saloon and we'd drink POC Pilsner beer. Now, in this lead, I'm changing the scene 2 times. This is going to be 1 time. And we're coming back to the basement of the saloon. I was playing peg knife between the curb and the sidewalk, and I seen a drunken man coming down the sidewalk. In those days, children were afraid of drunken men, so I ran in the yard, put the hook on the gate, waiting for the drunken man to go by. But instead, the most respected man and the most wealthiest man in the community, Oates, approached this drunken man. And I was inquisitive to see what Mr. Kurtz was telling them. And these are the words I heard. Stanley, you are a good man. You got a nice wife, nice children, nice home, and a good job. But Stanley, you drink too much. Look at me, Stanley. I drink every day. I take a drink in the morning, a drink at noon, and drink at night. Stanley, did you ever see me drunk? Never, Mr. Kurtz. Well, that was the first time I ever heard about a person drinking too much. The next time I seen Mr. Kurtz talking to a drunken man, I was inquisitive again, and I heard this story. Harry, you are a good man. You got a nice wife, nice children, nice home, and a good job. But you drink too much, Harry. Look at me, Harry. I drink every day. I take a drink in the morning, a drink at noon, and a drink at night. Did you ever see me drunk? Never, Mr. Kurtz. Now, Mr. Kurtz's name is coming back in 1919 and in 1929. Remember what I said, that he was the most respected man in the community and the most wealthiest man in the community. Now we're coming back to the basement of the saloon with my friend Floyd, drinking POC Pilsner beer. And I said, what's in them 50-gallon barrels with siphon hoses hanging down? And he says, those are whiskey barrels. Let's drink some whiskey. We siphoned a few swallows of the whiskey. I went across the street and got the double axe to chop some kindling wood for the Potbelly stove. There's a man sitting right there. 15 feet away from that pile of kindling wood, there was an AA meeting place opened up 68 years later. 68 years later. Now that Potbelly stove, I'd like to mention to some of you people, I still have the picture of it, and I have the price of it. I donate a Potbelly stove the same size as that to Stella Myers every year for their clam bake. Every year I donate a Potbelly stove. And that reminds me of the first drink I ever had in 1912. That Potbelly stove in 1912, $1.82. I have the picture of the Potbelly stove and the price, $1.82. The one I give, the same size to Stella Myers for their clam bake, is $164 now. Now, in them days, I went to the parochial school and a nativity church, and a priest would go ahead and have me do different errands for them. Many a times he'd send me down the basement filled with containers with holy wine. Well, God asked Adam and Eve in the orchard, and he instructed them not to pick any fruit, but they did, and that changed the history of the world. But the priest didn't say, I should drink some wine, and they didn't say that I couldn't. But I did. I drank that holy wine. Every time I'd fill the containers, I'd drink that holy wine. And believe me, there was times I drank so much that I thought I was really holy. Now, they built one of the biggest churches in Lorain County, the Nativity Church. And for the grand opening, December the 25th, you know how the Catholic churches are decorated for December the 25th. And they wanted to have a vote to go ahead and have a boy guard the Jesus in a manger. And by a coincidence, I was elected to guard the Jesus in a manger. Remember those words. The church was filled with capacity. The standing room was all occupied. And while guarding Jesus in a manger, I says, don't worry, Jesus, I'm guarding you. I'm protecting you that no harm will come to you. In 1917, I had the soldier's uniform on and a rifle, and I paraded for President Wilson on Superior Avenue in Cleveland. And that December the 25th, I was guarding Jesus in a manger, and I says, don't worry, Jesus, I have a uniform and a rifle now to guard you and protect you that no harm will come to you. Remember those words. In 1919, I got a job in the post office. And by a coincidence, I got a route number 3, starting from 14th and Broadway, the street that I was living on, the street that I was born on, and the street that Mr. Kurtz lived on. Delivering mail like a mail carrier does every day. From a distance, I see a man staggering from one side of the sidewalk to the other, and I say, that looks like Mr. Kurtz. Oh, it can't be, not after all these years. But the nearer he got to me, the more convinced I was that it was Mr. Kurtz. When I got to me, it was Mr. Kurtz. It was only a half a block from where he lived. I helped him get home with my mail carrier's uniform. And I said, all these years, he was telling drunks that he takes a drink in the morning, a drink at noon, and a drink at night, and nobody ever seen him drunk. Well, by golly, he sure is drunk now. Every time I seen Mr. Kurtz after that, he was drunk. Until 1929. He lost everything he had, as wealthy as he was. But now, he's an alcoholic. He can't only take a drink in the morning, drink at noon, a drink at night. He's got to have something to drink all day and all night. So he rigged up a still of his own, and the federal agents caught him, but they knew how wealthy he was, and they were only making the booze for himself, so they didn't press any charges. 6 months later, Mr. Kurtz died. In 1920, I got married. And in 1921, my wife said that I was drinking too much. And I says, I'll try to cut it down. I'm going to the bootlegger, and I'm only take 3/4, and I know I can't get drunk on 3/4, and I'm not even going to drive the car. I'm going to walk. As I walked down East Avenue, I heard somebody call my name. I looked around. It was a fireman with a fireman's uniform. And he said, Ed, where are you going? I says, going over to get a couple of drinks. Come on in here. They sell it here. So I went in and bought him a drink, bought myself a drink, and I said, I'll buy another drink, but I only brought 3/4. He said, that's all right. You bootlegger will cash your checks. Your checks are good. I didn't bring my checkbook. Well, he's got some blank checks here. So I made out a check for $25. And we bought more drinks and played penny ante just to pass the time away. We played penny ante. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm ready to go home, and the bootlegger says, what's the use of going home? Plenty of rooms upstairs, sleep up here. So we slept there. This was on the 18th day of June. And the 19th, 20th, 21st, the bootlegger's wife fixing breakfast, lunch, dinner, and we're buying and drinking booze. Until the 8th day of July, when I decided to go ahead and go home. When I got home, my wife said to me, she says, I thought you said you was going to go to the bootlegger and spend 3 quarters. While you was gone from the 18th day of June to the 8th day of July, I decided to find another place to live. You know, too many bootleggers in Lorain, we're going to move to another county. Fine. So we moved to another county. Well, it wasn't too long. I knew bootleggers in Lorain County and Erie County. While in the second county, I commenced to realize in 1922 that I was an alcoholic. I was shaky in the morning from drinking. But I found a solution for it. Oh, did I find a good solution. I found out that by taking something to drink, it'll stop the shakes. But I had the shakes so darn often, I had to take more to drink, and I was in the second stages of alcoholism. And then in the third stages, in 1923 and 1924, I was in the fourth stages of alcoholism. I'd walk through the woods and chew on bark, leaves, and roots, thinking I'd find a chemical to stop the craving of alcohol, and nothing helped. My in-laws offered me a solid gold watch if I would stop drinking for 30 days. I couldn't stop for 30 minutes. I was in the fourth stages of alcoholism. And if any of you never went through the third or fourth stages of alcoholism, thank God that you never will. Because if you think Halloween has funny faces, you should go through the third or fourth stages of alcoholism and you'll see the funniest faces you ever see in your life. Even with your eyes closed. When a Warner Brothers Studios asked me to come to Hollywood to write the script for The Lost Weekend, the Ray Milland won the Oscar, I had one hell of a time showing the carpenters how to build that dummy wall so they could shove rats and snakes and little mice carrying bales of hay on their backs. That's the fourth stages of alcoholism. What am I going to do? How am I going to go ahead and stop drinking? I tried everything. I'm going to shoot myself. I had a single barrel rifle, but the barrel was too long. I couldn't go ahead and pull the trigger and shoot myself. Something told me to hang myself. I went in the garage and got a rope to hang myself. I threw the rope over the limb, and I wished to God that somebody would have a camera to take the pictures of hundreds and hundreds of birds flying all over me, my face and head and body. I didn't even have time to take the rope around my neck, chasing them birds off of me. I pulled the rope off and walked down the path, and I seen all them birds on the limbs of the trees. Now, what the hell was them birds flying all over me for? That's the fourth stages of alcoholism. There was no Catholic priest in Florence, Ohio, so I took my Model T Ford sedan, drove to Wakeman, Ohio, seen the Catholic priest there. Father, I got a terrible alcoholic problem. Could you please help me? Put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, son, go home and pray. God will answer your prayers. I says, Father, I've already done that. He put his hand back on my shoulder again. He said, son, go home and pray harder and pray longer. God will answer your prayers. Well, that was the first time I had any confidence that something was going to become of my alcoholic problem. I went home and I prayed. 1924, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, with blisters on my knees. And I said, God, how much longer do you want me to pray before you help me with this alcoholic problem? But I remember what the priest said. He says, pray harder and pray longer. And 5 days later it happened. The vision of God appeared. And the voice of God said slowly, take your family and move to Havana, Ohio. There you will meet a well-dressed man. I told my wife, what happened? She said, that must be an answer to your alcoholic problem. Where is Ravana? Being acquainted with cities and states while working in the post office, I said, it's in Portage County, near Akron. The following Sunday, we got on our Model T Ford sedan, and we drove to Ravana, Ohio. Looked over the town, stayed overnight and rented a place on Wall Street. We was there today to take some more pictures of the house. And 2 months ago, we took some. Went back to Florence, made arrangements with the moving van to go ahead and move us to Ravenna, Ohio. A day before moving, I says, I won't know any bootleggers in Ravenna. I better take a supply with me. So I went to Birmingham, Ohio, to the farmer down there and got 3 gallons of blackberry wine, went to a bootlegger and got 2 gallons of whiskey. The next day, I put that in a Model T Ford and followed the van to Ravenna, Ohio. We set up housekeeping on a Tuesday. Wednesday, I said to the wife, I says, I'm going out, follow God's instructions, to meet that well-dressed man. I stood on corners of Ravenna. We passed all them places, and I mentioned to my friends where I stood. Moved to different places, looking for that well-dressed man, all day long. When I got home, my wife said, did you have any luck finding the well-dressed man? I says, that isn't the way that God said it. He said, move to Ravenna, Ohio, there you will meet a well-dressed man. So the next day was Thursday, the second day. I stood on corners of Ravenna, moved in different spots. In the afternoon, I went into a hat store and bought a derby hat, the same as Jimmy Walker, the mayor of New York City, wore. I thought I'd be presentable when I meet the well-dressed man. Nothing happened. Friday was the third day. Saturday was the fourth. Sunday the fifth. Monday the sixth. Tuesday the seventh, Wednesday the eighth, Thursday the ninth, Friday the tenth. And Saturday was 11 days. God, what are you doing to me? I followed your instructions for 11 days. I didn't even take time to look for a bootlegger, only to meet the well-dressed man. What are you doing to me, God? Well, I knew my 3 gallons of blackberry wine was going. I'm down to the bottom of the second gallon of whiskey, and I was disgusted on that Saturday, the 11th day. Sunday was the 12th day. My eyes are bloodshot, and I'm shaky. I says, God, you've got to help me find a bootlegger. I'm going to die. I followed your instructions. I didn't even look for a bootlegger, but looking to meet that well-dressed man. And I says, forgive me, God, today I'm too sick and too shaky to look to meet the well-dressed man, but please, God, help me find a bootlegger or I'm going to die. I was too sick and too shaky to go ahead and drive the Model T Ford, so I walked down Wall Street and walked all the way down them streets down there and praying to God, please, God, help me find a bootlegger or I'm going to die. 9:30 in the morning, I looked up ahead, and I put my head up in the air, and I put a smile on my face, and I says, thank you, Lord, you are good to me after all. I seen a drunken man coming towards me. I stopped this drunken man, and I showed him my shaky hands. I said, mister, I'm not a revenue agent. I'm an alcoholic. You've got to show me whether there's a bootlegger or I'm going to die. That man was drunk. And he took me by the arm so kindly, and he said, sure, I'll take you to a bootlegger. We walked back about a block from the direction he came, and I says, he can't be the well-dressed man. He's just an ordinary dressed man. We walked through a back-end building, and he took me inside and introduced me to a man, Sam, the bootlegger. This is a friend of mine, Sam. He wants something to drink. A pitcher of wine and a pint. I said, yes. We sat down at one of those 30 by 30 tables. I thought there were some people living in that place today. We wanted to take the picture of that room where I was drinking by that 30 by 30 table. I says, pour the drinks out. I'm too shaky. He poured out an ounce glass of whiskey for himself and a half a glass of wine. I said, pour my whiskey in this wine glass. Poured about over a half a glass of whiskey, and I drank that. But I didn't forget what I prayed for. I says, God, thank you for showing me this man to bring me to the bootlegger. I would have died. The man drank his 1 ounce of whiskey and washed it with wine, and he said, I was on my way home when I met you. Thanks for the drinks, and I hope to see you again. And he walked out. I drank the rest of the pint of whiskey and ordered another pint from Sam, and I had a couple of drinks out of that. I was getting my bearings back. My shake started to stop. And the door opened up. And the nicest, well-dressed man walked in that door and said to Sam to get him a pitcher of wine and a pint. That well-dressed man came over to my table and asked me if I could use some company. Mister, could I use some company? Sit down and have a drink. I poured him out a drink in his one-ounce glass, but he was as shaky as I was. I said, here, you need a stiff drink. So I poured him over half a glass of whiskey in his wine glass, and I'll never forget, it was only like 5 minutes ago. He says, did I need that this morning? Did I need that this morning? His pint of whiskey and his pitcher of wine come, and he filled about three-quarters of a glass of whiskey in his wine glass, and he downed that, and he repeated. He says, did I need that this morning? I said, isn't there somebody on this God's earth can help people like you with the shakes? And he pulled out his hand and he shook hands with me. And he says, by the way, my name is Smith, 1929. Who the hell ever gave the right name in a bootlegging joint? You always give an alias name. I'm glad to know you, Smithy. My name is Johnson. I said, isn't there somebody on this God's earth that can go ahead and help people like you and I with the shakes? Johnson, they tried everything for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they haven't found a solution for it yet. I said, Smitty, I'm going to find a solution if it's going to kill me, because if I don't, this booze is going to kill me anyway. I hope you do find a solution, Johnson. We drank, and we had our shakes stopped by this booze. And I said, Smitty, my wife will be so glad. Then I finally located the well-dressed man. Will you come over to the house and meet the wife? He says, not this Sunday, Johnson, but I'll promise to be over some other Sunday. Sam has got my supply ready to go ahead home, and I'll promise to be over some other Sunday. Sam, get me a pipe to take out. I didn't drive the car that morning. I took shortcuts down through the fields over to Wall Street, and I said to the wife, well, it finally happened. I met the well-dressed man. Why didn't you ask him to come over? I did, but he promised to be over some other Sunday. I was so happy, went over to the Branson player piano, and I start singing and playing the piano. Highways are happy days when they lead the way to home. That night I was back to the bootlegger. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Looking for Smitty, I didn't see him. I said, Sam, has Smitty been around? Oh, he don't come around during the week, only on Sunday. He comes on a Sunday morning. So the next day was Sunday, and Schmitty was there, and he put his arms around me, and he said, Johnson, I thought about what you told me. That he says, I will go ahead and do anything you want. There's something going to come out of all of this here. Because I told Schmitty how I prayed to look for this well-dressed man for 11 days. How God directed me to move to Ravenna, and there I would meet a well-dressed man. Smitty says, Johnson, there's something going to come out of this. Have you any idea? I says, Smitty, the only thing I can think of. When I was guarding Jesus in the manger, I said, Jesus, I'm guarding you, I'm protecting you, that there no harm will come to you. I think he's doing that to me now. How about coming over to the house and meet the wife today? And he says, no. He says, Sam has got my supply ready, but I'll promise to be over some other Sunday. That's two Sundays now I met Smitty. Two Sundays. At 612 Highland Avenue. That was the bootlegged joint. 612 Highland Avenue. I was there on a Monday, and I was there on a Tuesday night. Now, on a Tuesday night, I was so relieved that I finally followed God's instructions, and I met the well-dressed man. And I said, I hope to God that this will never happen again to me, or what happened 2.5 months ago. Now we're at 612 in the bootlegging joint, sitting by the 30 by 30 table where I met Schmitty. Two Sundays and 2 days later. Now we're going to change the scene from here like we did from the basement of a saloon. And then we're coming back to 612 Highland Avenue after I tell you this story. 2.5 months previous to that, I was out and pretty drunk. I came home, very drunk. But I usually have a pint in the clothes closet to get the shakes out. I got up the next morning and there was no pint. I looked through all the clothes, there was no pint in the clothes closet. I laid down in the bed and I says, I sure must have a pint there. I got up again and looked through the clothes closet and there was no pint there. What happens? God, you've got to help me. I'm too sick and too shaky to go ahead and put on my clothes to go to the bootlegger. God, you've got to help me find something to drink, or I'm going to die in this bed. I laid there. I don't know how these things come about. I called the wife, and I says, you remember last night I came home pretty drunk, and on the way home I hurt my back. Have you got any rubbing alcohol down here to rub my back? She wasn't an alcoholic. She didn't understand an alcoholic. She says, no, but I'll go and get some. She went out and got a bottle of rubbing alcohol, and I turned around. She rubbed my back, and you would never believe how anxious I was for her to stop rubbing my back that I had to tell her, that feels better, that's enough. I said, when you go out, will you get me a pitcher of water and a glass? She laid the bottle of rubbing alcohol on the nightstand, went over and got a pitcher of water and a glass, and I said, when you go out, please close the bedroom door. As soon as that bedroom door was closed, I got up out of that bed as shaky as I was. And I filled a half a glass of water and the rest of the glass with rubbing alcohol. And I downed that and swallowed hard so I wouldn't have to vomit it up. And I laid on the bed for 5 minutes and I could feel my hands calming down, calming down. God, you've got to help me. I need your help if I ever needed it before. Please help me. Go ahead and get dressed up. I got up and drank, filled another half a glass of water and the rest with rubbing alcohol. I drank that and I says, God, you've got to help me get my clothes on. I start putting on my trousers and shoes and socks and shirts. And I walked out of that bedroom. And my wife looked at me. And she says, are you up already? I says, you will never believe in your life how much that rubbing alcohol helped me. You will never, never believe. She's thinking about what she rubbed on my back, and I'm talking about what the two glasses I took internally with poison on there used externally only. I went down to the bootlegger and ordered a pint and a quart of home brew. And getting the rest of my shakes out. And that's when I said, God, please help me and guide me never to go through that torture in my life that I had to drink rubbing alcohol to stop the shakes. I beg you, God, to guide me and protect me never to go through that torture again. Now we're coming back to the bootlegger at 612 Highland Avenue. I said, Sam, get me a gallon of whiskey and a pint to take out. He got a gallon of whiskey and a pint. I went home in my Model T Ford and I got a shovel and I dug a hole 10 by 14. It was easy digging. People used to raise, I remember, a lot of salary in through that district there. And I put that gallon of whiskey in that hole and a board over top of it. And I stood there and I looked up in the sky and I said, God, please, God, help me and protect me and guide me that I won't touch that gallon of whiskey unless I'm too sick and too shaky to make it to the bootlegger. That's two Sundays and two nights later. Now, Wednesday I was down to the bootlegger, and Thursday I know I won't see Schmitty until Sunday. Friday, Saturday, I says, well, Schmitty will be here tomorrow. That's the third Sunday. I went over, and Schmitty was already outside. He put his arms around me and hugged me. He says, Johnson, I never want to lose you, Johnson. I never want to lose you. I says, Schmitty, I says, I never want to lose you either. You're my well-dressed man that the God told me to go ahead. The vision of God appeared and said, move your family to Ravenna, Ohio. There you will meet a well-dressed man. And for 11 days I looked for that well-dressed man, and finally, on the 12th day, you came over to my table and asked me if I could use some company. You are the well-dressed man, Schmitty. We talked. About five more minutes. Outside, this wasn't inside of the bootlegger. On the third Sunday, this was outside. Schmitty showed me his shaky hands. He shook like I used to have. If you read Dr. Bob's and the old timers of how he shook, when he needed something to drink. And he said to me, he said, Johnson, if that bootlegger don't come pretty soon, I'm going to throw a Jerry. Schmitty, for God's sakes, hold everything. I helped him get in my Model T Ford sedan. He says, where you going? I says, down to the house. I got a gallon of whiskey down there that I put there Tuesday night. I says, I put it in a hole Tuesday night. I hope it's there. Don't worry, it's there. I took the board off, got the gallon out, took the cord off. Schmitty was too shaky, so I held the gallon for him. He took the big drink on Wall Street down here. I held it, and he took the second drink. Took the deep breath and took the third and the fourth drink. You want any more, Schmitty? Johnson, you're a lifesaver. This is a lifesaver, Johnson. You sure you don't want another drink? No, that's enough. So I start putting the cork back in the bottle to put it back in the hole, and Schmitty says, Johnson, aren't you going to take a drink? I said, Schmitty, I can't. Why not? I put the gallon in the hole in the board over top of it. And I said, Schmitty, I put that gallon of whiskey in that hole Tuesday night. And I looked in the sky and I asked God to help me and guide me and protect me that I won't take a drink out of that gallon of whiskey unless I'm too sick and too shaky to make it to the bootlegger. And Schmitty, I'm not too sick and too shaky. He says, Johnson, I don't blame you for keeping your promise. While you're here, Schmitty, come on, meet the wife. So I call him inside. I says, Rose, this is Schmitty, the well-dressed man that I told you about. Now, see, the words went like a typewriter. She didn't say, Mr. Andy, she says, did my husband tell you how he prayed for 5 years and 5 days, and a vision of God appeared, and the voice of God said, take your family, move to Ravenna, Ohio. There you will meet a well-dressed man. How he looked for the well-dressed man for 11 days, and on the 12th day you come over to his table at Sam Bootleg enjoyed and asked him if he could use some company. And he said that you was the well-dressed man. Then he saw you the blisters on his knees from praying for 5 years and 5 days. Yes, he explained and showed me everything. And it's very, very, very interesting. We talked another 10 minutes, and Smitty says, he didn't say Mr. Johnson. My wife didn't even know I introduced myself as Mr. Johnson, an alias name. But Smitty said, let's go over. Maybe Sam was there now. We went down, and Sam was there, and he apologized at 612 Highland Avenue. The bootlegging joint on the right side, from the back end we went. He apologized that his car broke down, he couldn't open up on time. So we each ordered a pitcher of wine and a pint of whiskey and sat at this same 30 by 30 table, drinking, and calming my shakes down. My shakes was pretty well calmed down. And the door opened up, and a man about 300 pounds walked in that door, and he said to Sam, get me a pint to take out, I'm in a hurry. That big husky man came over to the back of Schmitty and put his hand on Schmitty's shoulder, and he says, Doc, how are you? Schmitty looked around, see who it was, and he says, pretty good, Harry, how have you been? We're hauling a lot of sand from the pits of Ravenna. We've been pretty busy. And the bootlegger brought his pint, and he put it in his coat pocket, and he put his hand back on Schmitty's shoulder, and he says, Doc, he says, take care of yourself, I'll see you again, and they walked out. I said, Schmitty, that man just walked out, called you two different nicknames. I said, what's that, your nickname, Doc? He says, no, I'm Dr. Bob Smith from Akron, Ohio. There you are, folks. 42.5, 3.5, 4 billion people on this earth. When the voice of God said, take your family and move to Ravenna, Ohio, there you'll meet a well-dressed man. 4.5 billion people on this world wouldn't know who the well-dressed man would be. Not even he, not even me. Only God knew who he would be. There's the answer of that. Now we became real good friends. What can we do? And I said, Schmitty, 3 Sundays ago when you introduced yourself as Schmidt, I thought you'd give me an alias name, so I give you a name, Johnson. My name is not Johnson. My name is Ed Andy. So we introduced ourselves properly. Now we racked our brains figuring out what we could do for alcoholics. And I remember those days. The seed was planted at 612 Highland Avenue. Well, Schmitty and I, how many of you people in this room today have helped somebody else? You have helped somebody else. And while Schmitty and I, on the third Sunday, was in that bootlegging joint at 612 Highland Avenue, a man came over to us. And he said, maybe you fellas can help me. And Dr. Bob said, what is the trouble? He says, well, I got hurt in one of the factories here in Ravenna, and I'm supposed to be getting my estate industrial check, and I've been writing to Columbus for the check and writing, and they don't even answer. Could you advise me what to do? Now, there's the help. There's a seed that's planted here. There's a help. The first man that Dr. Bob and I helped. And I said, tomorrow is Monday. Governor Cooper is coming in to dedicate one of the buildings at Kent State College. I'll go down there, give me your claim number, give me your name and address. I'll go over and see Governor Cooper why you're not getting your state industrial check. I went over. 2 weeks later, he came over and showed me that he's getting his checks. Now, that was the first man that Dr. Bob and I helped. And how many of you people in AA help? And that's the way the AA was going. Now we talked. I gave Dr. Bob a 7-page letter. Remember this. A 7-page letter in 1932. Read this letter and sign it. He read it and signed it. And he said to me, he says, he didn't call me Johnson anymore. He says, Ed, he called me three names, Ed, Eddie, or Andy. He says, Eddie, if somebody reads this letter now, they'll put us both in a straitjacket. I says, why? He says, well, the way you got it down here, that there'll be men walking on the moon someday. They did. Men walked on the moon. And at that time, I said, in a second paragraph, there'll be millions and millions and millions of men and women that have found a solution for alcoholism. That was the second one. And the third one is very important. That letter went into Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and put in the concrete vault. And that letter won't be open until the year of 2032. And a third, that paragraph that I said, in 2014, there'll be millions and millions of men and women and children that'll be killed by bombs in the year of 2014. Now, we're already, all of us are afraid of the bombs. And the government is going ahead spending billions in order to go ahead and protect us and the country. Because, and 2014 isn't here yet. Dr. Bob came over the house on Wall Street. And he says, Ed, I got a letter. Read it. I read that letter. It was from Dr. Michael Miller in Cleveland, Ohio. Dr. Bob said that somebody squealed on him at the city hospital in Akron that he had an alcoholic problem. This Dr. Michael Miller in Cleveland wanted Dr. Bob to come over to experiment with alcoholics. Dr. Bob says, Ed, you take this letter, see what it's all about. I'm not going to go ahead and drive my car to Cleveland. Not the way Cleveland is with automobiles. They didn't have highways and byways and freeways like they have today. I took the interurban down there. And I told the conductor, I said, where do you I get off at this address? He says, get off at 9th and Prospect. Well, I didn't know where 9th and Prospect was. He says, I'll tell you when we get there. I got off at 9th and Prospect at 10:15 in the morning. I don't see Dr. Michael Miller until 4:30 in the afternoon. I got plenty of time. So I walked one block south from 9th and Prospect. I'm a stranger in Cleveland. I don't know Cleveland. I was only in there once when I paraded for President Wilson on Superior Avenue during World War I. I walked one block south. Here's a four-story Salvation Army building. Across the street, there's the Erie Street Cemetery, and the sign read, Eagle Avenue and East 9th Street. Two men there, three men there, four men there with bottles leaning against the Salvation Army building, drinking. I walked down Eagle Avenue. About every other doorway, one or two men sitting in a doorway drinking. I got down to Woodland Avenue, a man sitting alone. I said, what's all those guys drinking down there? Don't the police bother them? They're all alcoholics. They don't bother nobody, and the police don't bother them. Is there a bootlegger down here? Yeah, there's Angelo's right there. So come on, I'll buy you a drink. We've been to Angelo's. I says, give us two drinks. 10 cents in advance. This is Skid Row. You got to pay first. 10 cents, geez, that's cheap. So I laid down another dime. I says, give us two more drinks. And we drank that. How much is a bottle? 15 cents a half a pint, 25 cents a pint. Give us 2 pints. You'll never believe what that bottle done. You will never believe what that one bottle done. So I give this new buddy of mine a pint bottle, and I put the other one in the pocket, and I says, where is the lake from here? And he says, walk past the public square, walk straight north, and you can't miss it. Go down the hill, and you can't miss it. This is September of 1930. September of 1930. I walk down the hill and I see hundreds and hundreds of men working. And trucks, concrete trucks going back and forth like ants from an anthill. A man standing there and I says, what are they building down there? They said they're building a municipal stadium for the Cleveland Indians to play ball in. Many of you was down to the stadium, you see how it is. They was filling that marsh and that water. There was nothing but a dump in there. They was pouring thousands and thousands and thousands of tons of concrete for the foundation of the municipal stadium. Well, I don't see Dr. Michael Miller until 14. I'm nursing this bottle that I got. 1:30, that bottle is empty. I got a note, and I wrote in that note, God help us alcoholics to find a solution for our alcoholic problem. Edward R. Andy, Wall Street, Rivanna, Ohio, 1930. I put that note in that bottle and put the screw top on. When they was unloading the load of that concrete, I tossed the bottle in the concrete. And at that time, in September 1930, I said, hell, they'll never find that bottle in 1,000 years. But did I ever know what that bottle was going to do in the years later? Even though it's in 10,000 tons of concrete, I forgot about that bottle. 1930, I forgot about that bottle. But in 1940, when I led the first meeting in Akron, Ohio, I mentioned about the bottle. And then I mentioned it in 41, 42, 43, in every meeting that I mentioned that bottle. In the foundation of the municipal stadium. People had joined in AAs at that time. Men and women joined in AAs. They'd go down to the baseball game to see the baseball. And they'd go ahead and have friends to take bottles with them. And they would go ahead and pass the bottle to the man or woman that's in AA. And they would think about the bottle in the foundation of the municipal stadium. No thanks, I don't want to drink. That bottle is doing 12-step work for thousands and thousands of men and women in all of these years in the foundation of that stadium. That bottle can't walk or talk. And that bottle is doing more 12-step work than anybody. Who would ever believe in 1930 that that bottle would be so important? And that bottle is important. That bottle is important. Went down to Dr. Michael Miller at 4:30. He introduced me to a man. I thought it was just an ordinary man. And he told us what he wanted to do. And the next day I found out that man was Mark Hanna. He was from the richest family in the state of Ohio. They're not millionaires, they're billionaires. And Mark Hanna had an alcoholic problem. Dr. Michael Miller told us what he wanted to do, if we'd help him experiment with alcoholics. And we told him that we would. He says, we'll let you know, we'll set up programs down here, try to get the city to give us a hospital where we can experiment. So I told Dr. Bob on a Sunday when I'd meet him what happened, what Dr. Michael Miller wants to do. We would go ahead and experiment. Many of you was down to the lake. Used to call it the Hoover Dump down there where the Coast Guard is. It's a Burke Airport today. And we would go ahead and get loads of alcoholics from that Hoover Dump and experiment it with them alcoholics. In the meantime, telling Dr. Bob what experiment we had. And Dr. Bob located the Oxford group. Then he located Bill Wilson and Clarence Snyder. And the other, and then they started the AA group. At that time, we completed our program with Dr. Michael Miller. And the Hannas also owned two of the large newspapers in Cleveland, and Mark had a lot of authority, so he got the newspaper writers to go ahead and write a story about us. And we found a solution for alcoholics. The medical board stepped in then. We want what you got. Dr. Michael Miller says, we're not going to give it to you. This is our program. We studied this. We'll give it to you. The doctors will get rich and the alcoholics will suffer as we suffered before. We made this for alcoholics only, not for the doctors who get rich. We wouldn't give it to the medical profession. Then the government stepped in and said, if you boys are so interested in alcoholics, they offered Dr. Michael Miller complete charge in Lexington, Kentucky for alcoholics and a dope thieves. And offered Mark Hanna and I to go to Cordoba, the Republic of Argentina, to experiment with alcoholics there. Mark Anders says, I already accepted an offer with a banking institution in Buffalo, New York. Mark Anders said, I already accepted an offer with the Manufacturers, Traders, and Trust Company, a banking institution in Buffalo, New York. So he took that opportunity. They sent me to Cordoba, the Republic of Argentina, South America. I was there experimenting with alcoholics, 12, 13, 14 years old at that time. And I would write to Dr. Bob and tell him what we was doing. And I wrote to Dr. Bob and says, I'm flying back to the United States on the 23rd day of October, 1939. And Dr. Bob wrote to me, he says, Andy, when you go ahead and come back, call me at Akron. I want you to meet a friend of mine. This is very, very important. So I called Dr. Bob on the 23rd day of October, 1939. I said, I arrived in the United States. He says, Andy, meet me tomorrow at the Portage Hotel at 11:30. I want you to meet a friend of mine. And that's when he introduced me to Bill Wilson. He says, Andy, we got a program going on, AA program. We need a man like you to help us. With all the experience you've got with alcoholics, we need a man like you. Will you please help us with this program? I said, Dr. Bob, you're asking me to help you with the AA program? Do you remember what happened 10 years ago, 1929, at 612 Highland Avenue? Do you remember what I told you what happened? That the vision of God appeared and said, take your family, move to Ravenna, and I looked for 11 days for the well-dressed man, and you are the well-dressed man, and now you're asking me to help you? Dr. Bob, I'll do anything for you. How can we get more people in AA? I says, I got an idea already. So I asked the mayor of Cleveland if I couldn't open an office at the Central Police Station at 21st and Payne and have the judges refer alcoholics over to my office. And they referred alcoholics. And I put in thousands and thousands of them through that office. Dr. Bob says, Andy, you've done so well down here. How about going ahead and going through the West and open some groups in through the West? I opened groups. I just thanked 19 judges in California for cooperating with Alcoholics Anonymous, that a program I started in 1942. And I says, thank you for your cooperation. Give me a report. Since I originated that program, they put in over 79,000 men and women in AA. For the rest of my living life, I always want to remember that I would rather have the Spirit of God in my heart than the spirits of alcohol in my head, and bless you all.